Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
CliffCentral.com.
Well, we may as well talk about it.
Yeah, let's continue. Let's continue.
So, you were saying when Winston recorded this,
he was a 20-odd-year-old,
20-something-year-old on the sax, right?
Yes,
yeah. Tintana. The tone and timbre of the black male voice, you can hear it on that. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a surprise for you guys. Yeah, you know, Percy and I were rapping on and on, waxing lyrical about
jazz. Right.
And then, of course, Mr. Loud and Late. But you're not the surprise, Monabisi. But thanks for spoiling it nonetheless.
It's a hip hop name, I know. It's okay.
In fact, Monabisi is not a surprise. He's like a.
Don't go there. Do not go there.
But anyway, we do have a surprise in the studio.
Yes.
And he's going to burn up all your love.
Yeah.
Is that a bit of a cliche? I'm sorry, I've used some of your lines in my lines.
Too many times. In fact, they worked. You should give you money for trademarking that.
Yeah.
Mr. Sipo Hot Sticks Mabuse, how are you, sir?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for inviting.
Standing ovation.
Yeah, in fact, thank we should so actually much. Stand with our mics. We should honor the man and speak on mics
everybody.
While standing.
Yeah. You know what I think about Brasipo?
Yeah.
Is that his name is very deceptive.
Okay.
Because when you say Hot Sticks, you think of him only as a drummer.
Exactly. But
he's a very prodigious musician.
Exactly.
You know, saxophone.
Yeah.
Actually, composer. Let's talk about that. Because I always thought, when I first, you know, got introduced to your music, I knew that, well, I didn't know, but I knew you were more than a drummer, but I thought you were a drummer because of the Hot Sticks part.
I'm still a drummer.
You're still a drummer.
I'm still a drummer. What are
the mean one at that.
What are the instruments that you play?
Well, you know, I don't want to say I play certain instruments.
Okay.
I am a curious musician rather, because every instrument I get to, I want to try and play. So next time you'll see me probably playing a harp.
Which is not very far off.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll be playing a harp.
Okay, but can you play a harp?
I'll probably play also, you know, a kalimba, the mbira.
Yes, the mbira.
Some of those instruments. I think I come from an era which was more influenced by thinking through music, thinking into music. And that sort of motivated or inspired us to learn different things. Every country you go to, the first thing you want to is not the food, it's the instrument and the music. I mean, two or three years ago, I went to the Middle East, and I went into Syria. The first thing I wanted to know, what instruments do you guys have here? And I had my soprano saxophone and flute. And they brought a violin called a rubab.
Yes.
You know,
A
rubab.
Okay.
Yeah. And what was even more interesting about that instrument, you could not just get it in the city. It was in the Bedouins, the desert.
Where the griots are.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this guy started playing. I took out my soprano. So I interacted and I bought one and I asked him to teach me.
So at what age did you... You were born in 1951,
yes. Right?
So at what age did you start hearing the music? When do you remember that I can hear the music? And that's the music that obviously shaped you, you know?
You know, to me, that again is cliched.
Okay.
You know, you hear music in your mother's womb.
No doubt. No doubt.
That's the first thing that will determine as you come out as to whether you'll be musical or not.
Mm-hmm. The frequency. Yeah.
Yeah. If your mom did not sing as she was working or doing anything, you will not be able to, you know, to relate to music. So I'd like to believe that I heard most of the music from my...
From the time that you were in the room, right?
She was a Zulu woman, you know.
So we're talking like 50-51 here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other advantage I had is that I had uncles, you know, who were a group of Katamiya singers.
Okay.
Right.
And that for me was one of the most infectious period.
Yeah.
My musical formation.
What is Katamiya? Because I'm from a new era.
Lady you know? Smith, Black Mambazo.
Right.
Simple.
Yeah. Percy.
In a nutshell.
No, I know I'm asking because I'm not the only one that knows. You know, the youth of today, I know we don't, I didn't know that. Mm. And I'd like to consider myself as a fundi in that department.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Percy has just given you an example.
Right.
It's that kind of music as sung by, I think the easier description of Zlatamiya would be as in Ladysmith Black Mambazo's type of singing.
Right,
because
right.
Because they are the, maybe a repository?
Okay.
Yeah.
Or the most popular group that has really taken that music.
The most well-known, I suppose, in South Africa.
So that kind of music is considered Zlatamiya.
That's an interesting...
Zlatamiya,
the musical, where it started, you know, from what I've heard, that it was started at the mines. They used to have, in the 20s, they used to have barbershop quartets and those kind of singers coming in from America.
Male chorales,
right?
Yeah.
But the bosses on the mines didn't like it when the blacks were making noise, especially because it's got all those moves.
So
they had to learn how to make the moves
tiptoe
gently and sing it at a lower volume. Am I right there?
Nah. Let me, you know.
Come on.
School us. We're in school right now, so school has started.
I was studying anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I actually, musical anthropology, one of the subjects that I immersed myself in was a lot about Zlatamiya, Ingoma Busuku.
Mm.
Now, not in the mines. It did not happen in the mines. It was different. It happened in the kitchens. The guys who came to work in the cities, who came to work in the cities, and then because there was nothing else to do at night, so they exactly as you were saying, collectively, come through, get together, and start making music. You know, and of course the dances which were tiptoeing, and so that's how it was created.
What I find interesting, Rasipu, the relationship between this music and the culture of a people is that it comes out of a Zulu experience.
Absolutely.
A people who are known to be very robust warrior types, and yet the music is so gentle and so soft.
But hang on a second. I mean, let's talk about this.
So what I'm finding very interesting is that I mean, even the harmonies of the sound of the music itself is so sweet and gentle.
I think Zlatamiya embodies the contradiction of a Zulu man.
For sure. This is what I'm saying.
They become all soft.
This is exactly what I'm saying. That when the general stereotype of Zulu masculinity is that of a robust Mzokshaya winner.
When he talks to a man, he'll say it like that.
It's like you have this variant as well, you know, another thrust and expression of that identity that's so soft and beautiful beyond measure. You know,
people need to understand Zulus in holistically.
Yes,
I am born of a Zulu woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I have known Zulu gentleness beyond the warrior, because fortunately I was surrounded by uncles, you know, who were always gentle, generous, and so, and protective. Their warrior-like status is more protective rather than aggressive.
Okay,
that's true. And this is the experience that I grew up with. Now, for me also, the advantage of maybe the privilege of being born in that environment was such that I was exposed to this music. My uncle, King, my mother's second eldest brother, used to work in the kitchens. Malum King.
Emma Kishi.
Yeah. So, but he was one of those smartly dressed men. Every Friday he'd come and visit my mom at home.
Sure.
But guess what? In the evening we go to Nansfield Hostel.
I was about to say, you're gonna go hear a concert or something.
We go to Nansfield Hostel. Malume would take me to Nansfield Hostel. Wow. It was glorious, man. It was glorious. There were groups like the King Star Brothers. Mm. And he also formed his own band. Because every time with December, Maguiwe Kaya, Ugoko, all his other brothers were coming from all other areas. And then Goko would make them food and drinks. And once they start drinking, wait until they start singing. Then the Song Goma Busuku was more celebratory, really. It was more interactive. It was not really about music that was created in the kitchens. Mm. It's music that has always been there at home, emakhaya.
Right.
So when they go to the cities, they interact in that music.
Okay.
And that's the only, that's all, it's almost like take slaves. Look at the slaves.
Yes, yes.
The only way of communication was through
music.
The transportable idiom.
Transportable idiom, yeah.
But your surname is Mabuse.
Mabuse,
which is...
Batswana.
Oh, Batswana.
Yes.
So your Zulu mom and Tswana father.
Yes.
Musically, from the Tswana side, what did you pick up?
Let me say something that's very interesting. My mother always called us Mabuza. You know, that's Zulu dominance.
Yeah.
She'd call my father Mabuza. And my father was always angry.
Yeah.
And my father would insist that we speak Sesotho when you know, Setswana.
Mm.
And he would emphatically say, "Mo asimo mazulu, ke mo Batswana." But my mother, being the Zulu person and the dominating one, she would say Mabuza. So I kill Sipho. You know? But my father called him Mpo. My brother used to be Temba, but his name is Tsepo. So there was always that.
The marriage of languages.
And growing up, I mean, you're a typical, you grew up in Johannesburg, Soweto.
Soweto, right? Yes.
So it's a typical mix of all these South African cultures and genealogies coming together that create you. And the space that you find yourself in. And then from there, it creates your love of music. And you join your first band. You make up your first band together with
the late Selbin Tuli.
Yes, Beatles. The Beatles.
Yeah. Yes.
What kind of music did you guys do?
In high school.
In high school.
Pop music.
Yeah.
Real pop.
Yeah.
You know, because we were high school and...
you were doing the music that was popular back then, basically.
Not at all.
Okay.
We were doing music which was considered elite. Because we were high school musicians, you know. Musicians at that time most of them were not considered educated. They never went to school. Mm-hmm. So they were considered vagrants and so on. Ronald, we started our band at high school and we spoke English and we listened to then what was called Springbok Radio, LM Radio. So all the music that we heard were the Beatles, the Rolling Stones and so on.
Okay.
And popular music then was Mbakanga music.
Oh, I see.
Saxophone.
When you say then popular music, are you talking popular music among the working class or in the township or popular music in South Africa?
In the black experience.
In the black experience.
In the black experience.
And so you guys were making music like what the Rolling Stones and the Beatles
were
making?
The Beatles and...
you know,
I feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my toes. That's the first song we sang in school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. At the assembly.
Assembly line.
Yeah. I remember the last gig you guys did at Gold Reef City. You and Brapops did that version of Norwegian Wood.
Yes.
Which I think... And I've heard all sorts of versions of this track. Right, and I think, I mean, a few days later, I was sitting with Brapops for an article that's in the current Black magazine. Go get your copy.
Damn straight!
That's cool! That's the one that I saw as well.
Yeah, yeah. And that version, for me, is, I mean, Kat Elling has done a take on it. But
that is also a killer.
It's a killer version. But
I look for that Norwegian word. I look for it everywhere. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, look,
which
man,
one?
Power?
No, it hasn't been released yet.
Yours has not.
If you missed the gig,
is.
This is why live music is important. This is why it's important to go to live venues.
If you missed
it there.
You can't go to all of them.
No, you can't.
But I heard Brapops on that Gora office, which I was sitting
there
in there.
That woman with
the sitar.
Look, man. Look, man.
It's an experience.
It's very few times that I'm lost for words, right?
I can see the soul is speaking now. Everyone can hear Percy's soul, it's speaking loud.
Prabhupada said that you guys are releasing that as a DVD and a recording. I can't wait. That shows you the largeness of Brasipo's music.
Yeah.
From Stratamia to the Beatles and to a version that encompasses North African instruments like a through Pops Mohammed, who's himself a giant on his own.
I'm a curious person. And you know, incidentally, speaking about that, there was a guy who came to tune the piano. He's from England.
Uh-huh.
And he grew up on the Beatles music. For him, that was the best thing he'd ever had musically to come out of this country.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy came to me and he said, Sipho, how old were you when you heard the Beatles? You playing this music? I said, that's the first song I performed on stage.
Norwegian Wood.
Very first song I performed on stage. I was a nerve wreck. Going there in front of a microphone.
By the way, what,
hundreds
of
students.
Do you remember what year was that was?
Yes, 1968.
1968. What we're talking about. That year, right? That number.
The Yakaling Kumuya, huh?
Yeah.
1968.
Okay, but from there, right? Musically, let's go to now as a grown man. Mm-hmm. You are part of one of the funkiest, coolest bands to come out of South Africa at the time. I mean, you guys, in terms of fashion, you were doing things that were like out of this world.
In fact, I think we should tweet a picture of him now.
The fashion hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
But you're with Harari, right? You didn't start out as Harari. That happened after you guys got together, and then you went to Zimbabwe to do a tour.
Yes.
And then you came back and you were like Harari. But
yes.
Harari, like in the 70s, for me as a child in the late 70s, it was like the coolest band ever. Only the cool kids had those albums. But not everyone could pull off the look that you guys had, of course.
But you know, this is something that I always want people to understand. Harari grew as more as a concept, politically conscious concept, really, rather than just a group that made music.
Okay.
For instance, for us to change from the Beatles to Harari was as a result of Black consciousness influence.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
We were privileged in a way that we interacted in that space.
Yeah.
Where BC was, you know, there was just this groundswell of political influence, which was fantastic, which is great influence. Because then what it was saying, look deep to yourself and find out who you are.
Right. Mm.
And then
right.
from there, you're able to express yourself better.
Right.
Musically, you know, literally and so on. So we changed from the pop into the traditional. And the music that you are referring to is the second era.
Yes.
That's a different generation, because a lot of people did not hear Harari during Selby's time.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, people never heard us during Selby's time. And unfortunately, it was a very short-lived time. But trust me, many of the Black consciousness exponents today can remember, because most of the music we made at universities.
Yeah.
You know, which was where
and this
the,
is a hotbed of
that
consciousness.
Was the hotbed of consciousness. I mean, Botiro, Bo Steve, and these were the people that we interacted with. I mean, I constantly speak to Norman Dubezana, who is Norman is a specialist surgeon. He was there. He always says, "Maria Kumbula nifigile la pula le rumin lami e facility." You know, and these are guys that were there.
Here's an interesting thing for me. You know, we look at the young hip hoppers now and what they're doing, which is quite pop, but it's like they've taken it and Africanized it in that way. Did you guys get a lot of slack back then for being too American in any way? Did the people who misunderstood you and what you stood for, especially as Harari, the funk that you brought, the soul that you guys had, and this totally new look, which, you know, it's hard to place, in fact. I don't even know where it's coming from.
But
people criticize you for that?
When you set trends, nobody can criticize you for being the trendsetter.
Okay.
Because you lead the process.
Right.
Those who come, when you lead the process, nobody can be, you know,
they were never ready.
They were never ready for it.
They weren't ready.
Yeah. So, because we were setting all the trends off, all the groups that came and started giving themselves the African names was as a result of the success and the trends that we have set up. I mean, I can name groups like Sakile Stimela, Batsumi. You know, people don't even know there was a band called Batsumi.
Yeah.
Killer band.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
I've heard the music.
I still want to record some of their music.
I think it's right.
Yeah. I'm actually speaking to John Mutuping because I want him to come and play the piano.
Nice.
And I'll play the flute.
And we'll bring the crowd.
Please do.
I'll bring the drinks.
And the drinks we'll bring.
Yeah.
So we had to set the trend. And for us, it was very important because we were not just a band that made music without any level of consciousness of what the music, what is the value of music in our communities and societies. Yeah. You know,
Prasipo, another thing that has developed now that was not that strong then, and I'd like to talk more about that, is this idea of dividing musicians across genre lines. I mean, you were doing funk and whatnot, but in your circle there was the likes of Begim Seleku, who were hectic jazz musicians, but the interaction was, you know, beyond, you know, genre groupings.
Yeah.
And you guys saw yourself as musicians, never mind that your output
was different.
Tell us more about that interaction amongst musicians and how you guys as a generation saw your place in the community.
You know, when I said we set the trend,
mm-hmm.
some of the musicians like Becky were fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
very interesting enough, you know, for instance, pop music and Mbakanga had certain similarities where Harari became the influence into transforming jazz.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Soul Brothers became central into transforming Bakang.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And I said that at David's funeral. I said a lot of people think the Soul Brothers just as a group, but Mbakanga was always a group that was a music that was played on guitars, right? Blah, 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 yeah. And drums and so on. Come in the Soul Brothers, the organ takes over.
Yeah. Yeah.
A new trend, a new sound of Mbakanga is introduced.
The harmony grows.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Beatles did exactly the same thing. Pop music was a guitar, you know, driven
mm-hmm. sound. Genre. Yeah.
Until we came in with the organ.
Okay.
Wow. The sound was new. And of course we called it Soweto Soul music at that time.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
That's what we used to call it. But it grew from there, and suddenly there were all these bands. Beggy used to love Selby's keyboard playing.
Yeah, and so of course, he was a keyboardist himself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He used to play in a band called The Expression. And of course, there was also Sipho Kumede. So where are all these other guys?
Yeah. You know, everybody. I mean, this is like an anthology of everybody that ever played music in South Africa. Yeah. But you also worked with... Well, I suppose, do we even call them classical South African jazz musicians? Yeah. Abo Brahim Masekela, Mamnere Makeba, all those people.
The landmark artists.
Okay, the landmark artists. The landmark artists. You worked with like from classics, I suppose, classical landmark artists.
Sibongile Khumalo.
Sibongile Khumalo.
Yeah.
Who is like Afro, I'd say opera. She's, you know, if we can call it that.
She's a musician par excellence.
You know what I mean?
She's in another level.
But here's my thing. First time meeting Prasipo, Hot Sticks, 1980s. You're going to burn out. Oh, my love.
And the township is ablaze. It's burning for real.
But, like, you were just the coolest guy. Like, the coolest black man in South Africa I'd ever seen. And I say that, like literally, because...
In
like,
tights and a beret.
You're getting this American stuff. And you're like, only black Americans can be
also,
cool.
Is that why you started dressing up so well?
Exactly. No, for sure. And then, like, suddenly you come out, and it's like, hold up, switch off the TV. We have this, and it was such a great moment for us to be able to go. You know, I mean, you are a handsome brother. Like, you still are.
Have I changed?
No, you still are. You still are. But I'm saying, when you came out, you were like, dang, that guy. You know, and I was like, preteen, but I knew that, yo, if I have a girlfriend, I must not introduce him to Brasipo. You know. But the thing is, what you changed at the time, you know, when I first met you, was how we see ourselves. I mean, I suppose I was there with Harari, but I was way too young, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah.
When I really was, like, more awake and aware of who really I was when you came out with Burnout, right?
Yeah.
And it was, like, such a great look in terms of understanding that, you know what, the township is cool. It's not where we're supposed to be. Make no mistake about that. Yeah. But... it's just as cool as anything that is international. And that was so important, I think, for people of my generation at
somebody,
that time.
Somebody said that black virtuosity consists of exceptional black men and women making difficult things look easy.
That's it.
All right. I mean, I think the context within which Prasipo's...
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Did you hear, Percy?
That was deep.
What did you call
that, man? High intellectual verbosity.
Yeah.
O tsa Pitori di man. Yeah. Come on,
listen. No, no, no. Give me a minute, Ben.
Yeah.
But it's this idea that even I mean, if you know, townships now, there's democracy. You can make things happen, right?
Yeah. No, it wasn't there. Time.
The '80s also is state of emergency.
Exactly.
I mean, burnout comes into this.
Right?
It was tough. Mm. But to make it look so easy and fun, exactly, must have taken exceptional talent.
Yeah, and the high quality of the product in every way. The song itself, the video itself. There was nothing that you watched that didn't make you feel proud as a South African, as a young man. I thank you for that, because it made me realize that this thing was very much possible for us to be able to do. And part of where I am now is because of people like you. So I think that's what it is. Like, the exceptional talent that we see, you can do amazing things with that. Because of who you were and what you represented, here I am. So I wanted to say thank you for that. And I want you to know that we used Burnout in a show that we did. It was 98 when I was still at drama school, called Deep in the Lokalala. And people were still going crazy for it in 1998. It was just as contemporary as if it had just come out, when we were in places like Amsterdam and Jerusalem, and we're just touring, you know, internationally with it. And that was the one that stood out the most, that song that we played in that particular play, you know, as students.
Frankly, it still, you know, it still amazes me that every time I go into a club and I see...
You still club?
No. Well,
it's a different kind of club. It's like a jazz club.
I go and when people have to start dancing, and then they, you know, they play all the dance music, and when Burnout comes on, just the response and the reaction.
It's a classic.
And I think maybe it's all it. You know, that's, I always refer to that song as an ancestral gift.
Yes. Yeah. But I was going to say, how did you get it? How did you, like, were you sleeping and you heard it in your dreams and you woke up and you rushed to your flute or your piano and played a few chords?
Yeah, you know, it's very strange how that song was created, because in most cases you tell yourself, I'm going to compose. You sit on the piano and you start playing things. But this one, I think it was about 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. I was feeling somewhat depressed.
Okay.
You know, I was my spirits were rather down, because everything I was trying to put up that night was just not working. And I said to the sound engineer, you know what? I could actually see him also sitting like this and not knowing I think we tried everything possible to try and work on. And I went to the piano just because I just wanted to vent my frustration on what was. And suddenly this thing just came.
You got it.
Suddenly this thing came and I started playing. And I immediately said, can you please let's put this down, Rich. Let's put this down so that I don't forget it. And we started playing. And the song just came. I could actually see the song just...
It's just coming.
Unveil itself, and the lyrics were coming through. Everything was created on the basis that it was just spontaneous.
Here's an interesting thing with what you're saying, because now it makes sense. I mean, the song is about literally someone's going to burn out your love. It's a lack of reciprocation. You're giving. And if you think of love as a fuel of sorts, like a petrol or whatever, you're just pouring it on. And the other person is not pouring it back.
It's
so
true,
to speak.
Because I think it was happening at that time. I was also experiencing this relationship that was complex.
Yes.
And rather difficult. And there was just this thing. And I guess in a way, it inspired everything that I was saying. You know, I've been watching you, baby.
Yeah.
Every day of my life, you're messing up with these guys. You know what? There'll come a time when the love goes and you're going to burn out all this.
You're gonna burn it out.
No, and that's how it worked out.
Yeah. And then from there, I mean, you were already, a pop star. So did life really change for you, or was it just more of the same after this huge hit?
I must add, it changed. There were a lot of changes. I mean, I think if you look at what's even happening today, is that most of us aspire to crack it internationally and so on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when you suddenly hear from your record company calling you the following day and saying, listen, we have a deal with CBS.
Yes.
And you know who CBS is?
Wow.
CBS is where Michael Jackson is.
Yeah.
CBS is where the Rolling Stones are.
And they want
to
talk to you.
CBS is where Bruce Springsteen is.
Yeah.
And here you are from Soweto. Everybody wants to be in that. In that space. And you think, what? Peter Gallo says, come, let's go. We have to go to the US.
And off you go.
Off we go.
That's it.
And you come in there, all the posters, your name and every is amongst all those musicians. What more could you ask for?
A living legend.
What more could you ask for? You think, yeah.
Yeah.
This is almost like a dream.
Yeah.
And the next thing you're in Los Angeles. And you know what's even very interesting about this song? It was not only CBS that was interested. There was record companies in the UK, record companies in Germany, because they were all different record companies, but CBS was the major
holding.
And Virgin calls you. Say, no, we want this artist. Who is he? And of course, I must add that it came at the right time because there was all this interest around African music.
Right.
You had all the musicians like Yusundu, you know, Salif, and all these guys were just happening internationally. Morikante had just released this major, you know, Yaki Yaki CD. So, Bernard comes in within that space. And of course, Paul Simon comes in. So, the interest just grows.
How difficult was it, Brasipo, to be getting that level of international success in the background of the cultural boycott? Because you're mentioning Paul Simon. And of course the political climate or the political issue here was that no, you must, you know, isolate South Africa and whatnot. Because as a victim of that thing that people are trying to isolate, you in a sort of a catch 22.
You know what was very interesting? You while you were caught up in that, there were those who will fight your battles for you.
Yeah.
There were those who argued for and those against.
You
were in the middle of that space where there will be those who will fight your battles for you. So fortunately, you were not caught up in having to argue your own. I was not like Stimela.
Yeah.
Stimela, unfortunately, they were caught up with the Paul Simon issue. I was more outside it, and yes, I did get interviews in the UK, for instance, what my position was, and I was quite clear because I understood exactly what it meant.
Yeah,
but I was quite happy that I was in the space where others might, you know, the battleground was distant from where I was.
And you could also, I mean, another thing that goes unsaid is that when a whole lot of musicians chose to go into exile, you didn't.
Yeah, I didn't.
You stayed
that
here.
That also was
and
by
that worked, yeah.
That also was by default because
especially
I remember
with a contract to be in LA, right, in the States at the time.
Yeah, well, going into exile was something that was happening much earlier.
In
73, 76, and so that was a time where we could have decided to leave the country.
Right.
And of course we had, there were influences, you know, I must add that the Beatles, Harari, I don't know about other musicians, had friends in political circles. You know, some of the guys we went to school with were already there. So when we went outside, the influence was so strong.
It wasn't foreign.
You know, I mean, you look at General Spionyant.
Yes.
Yeah.
A very close friend who was in exile. Most of the guys that saw us start this thing were already in exile and would come to us and say, hey, man, manje, niyavaya or niyahlala.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you go into Zimbabwe, you raise funds for Zipra, and you know, the influence becomes so overwhelming. And you find yourself, yes. And you meet some of the guys who are leaving the country and say, we are via or we are sala.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That was...
It was heavy.
Yeah, it was heavy. The influence was there. Yeah. I mean, at some stage we met liberation struggle guys from Zim. Already we had interacted with guys like Mike Minyati and so. They say, listen, we want you guys to raise funds for us, man. And we were doing that. And one gentleman called George Motsimamut, said, we are going to have to speak to some of your people in Zambia.
Mm.
So we were in Malawi, and on the border,
hey,
we had to meet someone so that they can make us. But unfortunately, you know, fate makes a determination as to whether this is your life or not.
Yeah.
And should I say fortunately or unfortunately, we could not go.
Yeah.
So we came back home and continued doing what we were doing.
Yeah.
Musically.
And it has made all the difference.
It made all the difference.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, do you feel that was like one of the best decisions that you ever made? Because like you said, you had an opportunity and fortune decided that you stay. And here you were with us throughout that entire struggle until we finally saw that freedom.
I don't want to consider it as a decision that we made. It was a fate-determined decision.
I see.
Because I think we wanted to, but fate had it otherwise.
Yeah.
Said, no, go back home.
Yeah.
You know? And we continued making music, and look at where we are now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's on the
horizon? And when I look back, and I said, maybe it was for the best.
Yes.
Considering some of the things that are happening now, and the...
I think you have a better understanding of the people who are here.
I don't like to feel... You know, the current state of politics in South Africa is such that some of our people have had a raw deal.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Especially the artists.
Yeah, especially the artists.
I'm not saying in any way that artists must grovel towards politicians and request this and have their demands and
want this.
We want patronage and stuff like that. Mm. The power of how we transform our own space will always remain with us. But you know, we've become so beholden and embedded in all this political space that if we cannot be seen to be an opposition, we cannot say anything opposite to what is currently happening.
About it.
A few weeks ago, I wrote a piece, unfortunately it was not published, where I said, I find it very interesting that some of my peers and colleagues are quite happy to stand up and raise their voices on issues like xenophobia, AIDS, and so on. Those are easy things to talk about because then it sees us in the good light. Our soft targets, we can talk about those. But our voices are silent on issues of corruption.
Yeah.
Why are our voices
silent?
And yet, when we were called upon during apartheid to make noise, to speak about that corruption,
it was easy.
We raised our voices
it was easy,
and we were seen and we understood to be part of this liberation struggle. And suddenly all these things that are happening, which are corrupt, is it because it's a black government? No.
Well, we can't speak
against it. We must raise our voices.
Yeah.
You know, it may be a painful position that we take, but it is important that to be seen to be people that are willing to sacrifice it, because Mandela did not sacrifice so that he can be loved by everyone.
No,
even at that time, I'm sure there were people who, when he was willing to die so that there is righteousness.
Yeah,
and this is a position that many of us today, as artists, must take. Yeah. We must be in a position to say, no, we cannot allow corruption, you know.
Yeah.
Simply because we are given gigs or are put in positions of favor.
Yeah.
It doesn't make us any better.
Brahosi, I wanted to ask you this question. Do you DJ?
DJ? What is that?
What is that?
Oh, it's a musician.
No. I don't. I don't.
Speaking of things that you do, there's a gig coming up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
As we wrap up. There's this very, very special, and it's a gig that is very close to my heart as well. We really love to encourage many of our people to read. You know, there's an organization which has been started by a gentleman called Cyril Turton, where Cyril is an intellect. Okay, he's an academic, let me put it that way. He feels that our communities, our environment is bereft of quality influence.
Yeah.
Our people don't read.
14%. No, only 14% of
our people do not read. We don't read books.
Readers.
less. But do we count the new age of reading? Have we?
Yeah.
Look, how much do you read in e-books? How much?
Books, whether e-books or printed books, only 14% of South Africans are avid
we
book
tweet,
readers.
Yes.
The South African Book Development Council Facebook. Did a study in 2007.
But do we really go on e-book and spend 2-3 days reading what is on
e-book? There's something about being able to read a sustained narrative for that happens with your cognitive
brain.
Your brain, your cognitive development, and the development of your humanity, for that matter.
Right.
That's
that
so true, man.
Yeah, that you are able to do when you are able to maintain, reading a long, sustained narrative, the cognitive requirement to do that on your development as a human being that we are losing when we are not literate.
But are we adapting our systems to what there is to the current?
I'm reading Fela Kuti's Bitch of a Life now, and I'm reading it on my phone.
Right,
but that's a long, sustained
emphasis.
Book. The emphasis is reading.
Okay,
yes. Books.
Reading.
That's a matter
right.
of
Where
convenience, so that you don't forget your book because you never
exactly.
forget your phone, right? But do we actually read?
That's
and you're
the
right.
Point.
A lot
only
of us don't.
14%.
Read. 14%.
14%. This is like a.
Okay.
Yeah.
Study
so
we've got to wrap up.
Finish Let's up about the gig. So when?
So
the gig
is on the 24th of July.
Okay.
24th of
Pops
July.
Pops Mohammed and I, Purvi Vabana, the same woman on sitar, and Ashish Yoshi on tabla.
Right.
This is a very special a concept.
Okay. That Whereabout was, is it?
It's at the Lyric at Gold Reef City.
Right.
Okay, and that's the show that we're going to do.
And how much are the tickets?
$200. The tickets are not, the money is not for us.
Right.
It is for us to raise enough capital to buy more books.
Right.
Buy more books.
Right.
And influence communities to read.
Done.
Yeah.
We are involved,
six,
so we're
minutes.
Writing about it. And we'd like to get your piece that you did write that isn't published. Percy will get in touch with you.
And we'll set it up.
With your permission, we'd love to publish it.
Yes.
And with your permission, we'd like to assist you in promoting the event for the 24th of July.
Yes. Fantastic.
Yeah.
With your permission,
that.
We need to wrap up. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you so much for coming to the
Thank you so much.
Okay,
thank you to such wonderful people. Eh?
We're out of here.
But where are the women in the studio?
Behind you.
Behind you.
They're running everything.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
Cliffcentral.com.